Hey, it's Steve Imke. In the fall of 2016, I had an opportunity to spend two nights with a class full of hobbyists that wanted to learn how to take a hobby that they love and turn it into a viable business. During those two nights, I took them on a journey of business entrepreneurship. I'm sorry you didn't make it, and I hope this is the next best thing. Here are excerpts from that live event. Hope you enjoy it. But even more important, I hope it inspires you to get off the couch and do something with it. Thanks for listening. Accepting credit cards. So we're going to talk a little bit about that because that's where you're going to kind of get into some of these things. There's what we call aggregation, the PayPals and the Squares out there that take that. That's what I use principally. I use a PayPal, Square's another one. And then we have merchant accounts. And merchant accounts are really where you have like a point of sale terminal, and it's a little bit more complicated. We'll talk a little bit about all of that. The other thing you have to understand, there's what they call data security fees that are also associated with that, which are called PCI. And they can range anywhere from zero to almost $130 a year to pay for that security. And then there's the processing fee. So we're going to take a look at a couple different examples here as we go through there. So this is a typical merchant account. It's probably not what I would recommend for most people here. But if you did decide to go do this, this is kind of where it is. You have a gateway fee. That gateway fee runs anywhere between $0 and $15. It's kind of like an ISP fee that you would have when you have an internet service provider. The average is what they see on the end. It's about $10 is when I was doing my research for a gateway fee. This is on a monthly basis. Then you have a statement fee, anywhere from 5 to 10. The average was about $10. You have a monthly minimum fee. This means if you don't run, you know, at minimum of $25 through the account, you're gonna have a penalty basically for not running a minimum through there. They have a discount rates that you have to apply to every one of the swipes. So if they swipe a card, it runs anywhere from a little bit over a third of a percent to as much as 2% of the bill. The average was about 1.5% on a swipe. But if you had to key the card in because you were taking a telephone order, you see how that jumped up to almost just short of a percentage, or almost as high as, you know, over 3% of that same thing. They're getting the same thing, but the difference is accuracy of a swipe and or versus the keying in, two different pieces of software. They have to kind of process that. They have a transaction fee on top of that, which is a small thing, but we'll see how that kind of plays into different price items. And when we're sitting there talking about crafts, and they're kind of small, some of these things really add up. But the transaction fee is anywhere from 15 cents to 26 cents. Average was about 25 for each transaction that you pay for. And then address verification, which not a lot of them do anymore, but if they did require it, you see it started out with zero, then it was, you had to add a tenth of a percent plus another 10 cents to it, but the average was about zero, so not too many of them do that anymore, but some require that. So here's what we'll call a low transaction. So I have a little craft business. I'm selling no more than $100 worth of stuff over the course of a month. I have four transactions of $25 each. My gateway fee, $10 a month. My statement fee is $10. My PCI fee is $10, so I got $30 in fixed costs that I got to pay every month. Now, for my variable cost for the transaction, the four transactions I did, was a discount rate of 25 cents per. That cost me $1. Transaction fee, 1.5. So I ended up with $2.50 on variable fees. So I added up $100 in sales, $32.50 in costs. I essentially got to keep $67.50 out of that. $32 went to the merchant account. That's horrible, right?
That's horrible.
Yes, it is. But that's a merchant account.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's a merchant. That's why I said it's probably not for the people in this particular workshop. So we're talking about moderate now. Now we have 10 $100 transactions. Okay, so we've done $1,000 worth of transactions in the course of a month. And we've run the same thing through there. Still $30 in fixed things, the discount rates or the variable piece. And in this particular situation, I get $952.50 that I get to take home, and it only cost me just under 5% total cost for the transaction. Does that make sense? So, merchant accounts, really nice if I'm looking at more sales, more volumes, because there's a lot of fixed expenses associated with it. So see how we're kind of dovetailing some of the other conversations we had in there. So these are what we call aggregators, Square and PayPal being the two biggest ones that are out there. Their swipe fees, a little bit higher, 2.75%. Manual entry, again, is about 3.5%. A transaction fee is 15 cents. One of the big things between Square and PayPal is that if you use Square, on day one, it's transferred to your bank right here. PayPal, it's immediately available in PayPal, but it takes 3 days if you want to move it from PayPal into your account. 24-hour support for PayPal, not so much for Square, and check scan. So if you take the pictures of the checks and everything else like that, they have put a 5-day hold on that. Now, with these, okay, some of the neat things that you do, because when you run these things like that, you get a picture of the transaction, description, sales tax rates, you can put all that stuff in there, tips and even the signature, all that stuff is aggregated. You can get reports out of that. So this, for most of what you guys are doing, this is far better because it's all variable costs. There's no fixed costs up front, no gateway fees, no anything else. It just kind of comes out of the back. And by the way, I mean, when I say PayPal, it doesn't mean that they have to pay with PayPal. They can use PayPal credit cards or all that other kind of stuff to go in there. And they have the what I call the PayPal here. That's that little thing you put, this little audio thing. I should have probably bought one, but it connects into your audio jack of your smartphone. You can do it right there, and everything goes in there. And they literally sign right on your phone if they have to sign it or whatever. So it's really pretty cool. And it's good if there's places where you had tips to it, because then there's a place where they can add tips and a little meter and stuff like that to go there, where you don't get that with the point of sale terminal, the other ones, okay? So that's probably the most common for paying. So we're still in the marketing segment right here, and we're talking about market strategies. So what are the methods, all right? So we're talking strategy right here. So the methods of the sales and distribution, we've kind of talked, remember, we're in a business plan section here, so we've talked about some of these things as related to business model canvas. So you'll see some of these things, how they kind of come, and they're kind of similar. Am I using stores, or have an office, a kiosk, right? Catalogs or direct mail or a website. What is the method of the distribution? How do I actually get to the actual customer there? The packaging, quality considerations, those kind of things. Pricing, we've talked about that. Discounted pricing, volume, seasonal, competitive positioning, whatever. Sales strategies, direct sales or direct mail, email, affiliate, reciprocal, viral marketing, consignment. There's just so many different ways to think about how you can look at your sales strategies. Do you have sales incentives or promotions? Do you use samples, coupons, online promotions, add-ons, rebates, those kind of things that you can go ahead and do? Advertising strategies. I'm not a big advertising guy because advertising is the head of that long tail economy. So you've got to be making a lot of them because it's not very differentiated and you can't target it very well. When I say ads, you got to also think about the Google ad and the Facebook ad, which is far more targeted than, you know, your typical television or newspaper or magazine. But I always like to share this part of the story, and that is I'm a bow hunter, and so I get Bow Hunter magazine. Now, I'm as interested in the ads as I am in the articles in there because I would never have subscribed to that magazine and actually paid a subscription fee if I had, I just self-identified myself as a bow hunter. So I gave them permission to market to me. This actually opens up a whole thing well beyond this thing. There's a difference between what we call permission marketing. There's a lot of different levels of permission marketing, okay? Everything from what we call intravenous, and I always think about that like people, and you go into surgery and just say, listen, something happens in the operating room, you fix it. I don't care how much it's going to cost, just go ahead and do it. We'll worry about that later, right? Because you're just going to tell them, do whatever you want. And then the other extreme is where you go to McDonald's and they say, would you like fries with that? Because you've already made an order for a hamburger or whatever, and they just ask you to you know, if you want to add on to it, right? So, I mean, there's a whole gap in between there. Social media strategies. Do you use blogs, podcasts, YouTube? Here's the difference. One is outbound, one is inbound, right? So you create the whole thing with social media, right, is you create a gravity for people to come to you, right, to go in there rather than you go out to other people and say, hey, I got this thing. Would you want to buy it? So advertisement is what we call interruption marketing. So we stop what you're watching on TV so that we can try to sell you some laundry soap. They've interrupted you. Whereas you read an article and somebody says, hey, you know, this did a great job in cleaning my clothes or whatever, and then it has a little click, and you click through because it's an organic kind of a thing and you want to discover more, that's permission marketing. Public relations, do you have events, press releases, interviews, that kind of stuff that go out there? It's another legitimate way to build brand awareness. And then, of course, networking, things like, you know, memberships and leadership positions and stuff like that. And so a good example from realtors. Well, I say, you know, if you're a realtor and you really want to go out and you want to sell more, it's all going to be word of mouth kind of thing. So how are you going to become the best realtor in town? almost forego any of this stuff. It's really about networking. Be on your city council, on your board. Go do these things. Be in the soccer, you know, the soccer organizations and do all these other kind of things. You need to be that person about town. When people are going to associate you with your career, and when it comes time to list their house, they're going to contact somebody that they know. Oh, you're a realtor. Would you like to list my house? As opposed to trying to go out there and market yourself to somebody who's not aware. Does that make sense? Nobody picks up the phone and says, hey, would you like to be list my house? You know what I'm saying? That just doesn't happen very often. Okay, so now we're talking about implementation. So now when we have to figure out, so we have all these things in our business plan. We try to figure out all these different elements, right? And by the way, I have you can download a business plan template. All these different bullets are in there. I just extracted them from this template. And but again, now the implementation part is, what am I going to do in-house versus am I going to outsource? And then the assessment of the effectiveness. It's really all about measuring. If I use social media, I can use analytics and that kind of stuff to determine what things are you know, not so much what things are selling, but what kind of things are causing more interactions and shares, and whether they're staying on a page versus doing some other kinds of things. Okay.
Thank you for listening to How to Turn My Hobby into a Full-Fledged Business. To learn more about Steve Imke, or to learn more about what it takes to own and operate a small business, please visit stevebizblog.com. That's stevebizblog.com. Or look for Steve's many books on various aspects of small business ownership at amazon.com or at stevebizblog.com.